Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Abba-dabba, motherfuckers! It's Ashley from the Video Nasty Project. Building up a little bit here. We're building up to something anyway. This one is an early 80s slasher film. That's kind of run-of-the-mill, but this one's got Body by Jake! Yeah, build them abba-dabbas! And it's Home Sweet Home. Don't you wish? So, watch the trailer over there, and we'll come back here and do our review. See you there. Work them abba-dabbas!
Hey, you want a beer?
7 a.m. in Los Angeles, and our top story continues to be the intensive police dragnet for an armed and dangerous escaped mental patient. 26-year-old Jay Jones escaped from the Hobart State Hospital for the criminally insane last night after killing an attendant and leaving a guard in critical condition. Jones was committed to Hobart 8 years ago after a lengthy and well-publicized trial following the bludgeoning death of both of his parents. We talked to the state.
Wow. It looks like the boogeyman has been here.
He's extremely dangerous.
Oh, my God.
And he could be on PCP.
The Bradley Ranch was situated in a desolated area on the outskirts of Los Angeles County. Thanksgiving was a time for merriment and friends. They didn't know their visitor was coming home to continue a massacre he started 8 years before. They were all frightening childhood images in his mind. Images he had to get rid of.
Listen, man. Listen to me. You're proving to no good. It only caused you problems, man.
My mother was no good like that!
Crazy God! No!
There was nowhere to run, no one to stop him. He was there, ready to kill. Unstoppable, deranged, and powered by excessive doses of PCP, he created cruel and mutilating horror. He was coming home. Home, sweet home.
Hey, Brad, want a beer?
And that was Home, Sweet Home. Probably the most generic title you're going to find on the entire list. But that's okay, because this is probably the most generic movie you'll find on the entire list.
Oh boy, is it full of generic. I mean, this is more generic than back in the 80s when everything was white and had barcodes on them with words like beer.
It starts really strong, though. It's generic at the beginning, but it starts really strong because you've got this dude hanging out on a parking lot somewhere, kind of pulled off the freeway, because he's got to get his beer on. And he just starts drinking and drinking and drinking. And somebody comes up to him and he's like, hey, man, you want a beer? And all of a sudden, it's Body by Jake.
So Jake Steinfeld was this really popular. He's actually still a pretty big guy. Very popular in the 70s and 80s as the exercise guru. You know, he was kind of probably rotating in the same area as Arnold Schwarzenegger, I would guess.
He did the body training for Harrison Ford for Temple of Doom. So he was connected to the stars. He was the trainer to the stars.
Yeah, he's Haley Steinfeld's father. As in, like, that Haley Steinfeld. As in, like, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Spider-Gwen.
And he had, like, a TV series. He did, like, My Two Jakes or something like that. And
this is a big guy, too.
Yeah, he's Lou Ferrigno big.
However, there's a problem with casting Body by Jake as your slasher villain of the jure. Because it's goofy. We, growing up in the 80s, we caught him on, you know, UHF all the time. And so imagine, if you will, taking Richard Simmons and making him Norman Bates.
Yeah, he's too recognizable as somebody who's relatively wholesome, and that makes you a better person versus somebody who is an escaped psycho loony who's been in the pen for 8 years since murdering his parents at the age of like 18 and comes out and kills somebody and then goes and shoots dope into his fucking tongue. That is not Jake Steinfeld.
And so, Body by Jake, he strangles the guy to death and then steals his car, injects PCP into his tongue, and then goes on a driving murderous rampage through the streets of LA, where he runs over an old woman crossing the street in the most hilarious scene in the entire fucking movie.
And then you see the car with blood all over the windshield and him behind the wheel with this ha 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 look on his face.
But the problem is that the movie shoots its wad in the first 5 minutes because it's setting up this expectation of this is going to be awesome and crazy and over the top and oh my god, Jake's going to be covered in blood going and nothing comes of it. After the opening scene, after the opening credits, it just kind of dies.
It devolves into this, basically the B-roll of this thing, of this couple going up into the mountains somewhere above L.A. to this guy's house where he and his wife are going to throw a beer party and food and shit. And this couple, I don't know if they're married or if they're just dating, common law marriage, but they have two kids. One of them is a late teens, hardcore punk with who has a speaker strapped to his back with his guitar plugged in, and he's always playing guitar. And then there's the younger sister, who is about the same age as Drew Barrymore when she did E.T., I'm guessing.
Yeah, the young girl was probably the only person in the entire cast, aside from Body by Jake, to go on to have a career in Hollywood, Vanessa Shaw. She did 3:10 from Yuma. She did Eyes Wide Shut with Kubrick. She has a long career, and it started here. So she's the best thing in the movie, I guess? I don't know.
Well, I mean, they probably saw potential in this little girl and decided to Hollywood her. So we're going to mold her into a Hollywood actress. And parents went and had auditions, and boom, she got in. Like so many actors, a lot of them do star or get, you know, parts in trash. And then they go someplace.
And frankly, I thought her performance as Angel was actually pretty respectable for a child character who really didn't have a lot to do.
And then there's one other name in the cast that you'll recognize if you've made it this far into the movie, because there's Soleil Young, the girl from Demented. She was the one who went around, though. She was the one who got raped.
Well, some people do double and triple dip. I mean, what's his name who was in Cannibal Ferox, the one Italian actor, the over-the-top one, the asshole who got his, you know, thing cut off? How many has he been in? I mean, that guy was just a working actor, working all the time.
And so we follow these rather uninteresting and ill-defined characters as they make their preparations for Thanksgiving. There's that one guy who is the boyfriend of the Latina chick. He's obsessed with the football game. The big game's on, and he's got money on it, so he's fixated on that.
He's also fixated on a business meeting with Bradley, which apparently is another reason for him to be there for this Thanksgiving.
So her, the brunette, and the blonde, they decide, oh shit, we need some wine. And so they go get in the car and head off to town to go get some wine.
They go and take off. The rest stay behind. They're going to wait, and they're setting up the food and everything. And then they go away after they set the food on the table, and then Angel disappears. And this is after there was that interaction between Angel and mistake where he's doing magic with these balls, and he's just being this most amazing out of nowhere character. I'm like, just this on-screen magic, and he just keeps doing it and doing it and doing it. I'm like, one take, and I'm like, holy shit, this guy is amazing.
That's the frustrating thing about the movie in general and Mistake specifically. So when you boil him down to his essence, he is essentially Shelley from Friday the 13th 3. The jokester, the wacky comedic dude who causes trouble, gets everybody pissed at him. So that's Shelley is a one-dimensional character, but he has layers of humanity to him in the movie. That's the one thing that this movie doesn't do, except for this one scene. They don't humanitize Mistake at all. He's just this wacky jokester, except for this one scene.
But there is one bit near the end. And it's the one thing about him that actually made me like him a bit more than just that one scene is when Maria gets grabbed by Jake and he's got the knife to her throat. And this is before he stabs her. And Mistake says, wait, don't kill her. Kill me instead. He's going to sacrifice himself for this woman he doesn't even know.
I'll play a song for you, please, mister. Don't do this. Well, let's work out a deal.
And this is where Jake's character suddenly comes up with this back-loaded depth thing. He says, you know, women are blah, blah, blah. But, I'm guessing,
yeah, women are whores.
Women are whores. I'm guessing that he was probably dominated by his mother or somebody in his life, which is why he's the way he is, because he killed both his parents, but they never said why. And so he's saying women are whores. Now, generally, characters like this come loaded with all kinds of shit. They were abused. They were raped. They were dominated by women. They hate them. That's probably why he got so big and muscular when he was in the psych ward, you know, so he could deal killings out to women, because women are most of the victims. You know, when the men come forth to stop him, that's when he goes after them. But he mainly goes after the women just in general. And it's the worst deaths. It's running over the old woman. It's breaking a bottle and killing the brunette. It's doing all this stuff. It's killing Maria, you know, stabs her in the chest, you know, despite, you know, Mistake, you know, trying to talk him out of it, talk him down. And so, you know, too little too late.
So the blonde and the brunette, they go off to go get their wine. And then the father, he's hanging out and realizes that the power goes out. And so it's like, oh, I better go check the generator. Because he's got the big old Jenny in the back. And it's like, oh, I need gas. And so he gets in his car and he heads off into town to go get gas.
Along the way, he runs into the car, the station wagon that Jake stole. And he gets out to investigate it, and he looks around and is like, hello? Anybody in there? And then he does this odd thing. He steals gas from it.
And then he steals the battery, because his car is having battery issues along the way. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? You just stop and steal gas from a car in the middle of the road? Well, that's okay, because Body by Jake and then comes along and kills him in the most awesome death ever. So Jake's walking up through the woods and he pulls out this big old Bowie knife and you're thinking, okay, Dad's going to get stabbed. And then it's all out of nowhere. Body Bay Jake comes flying in and does this Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop, boom, on the car hood and kills him, decapitates him in the car. Fucking awesome. Beth Ness on the entire list.
Yeah, it's pretty action-packed. I mean, all it's missing is, ooh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
But he is doing his best snarling routine in this movie.
Yeah, the only thing it was missing was a nice, juicy crunching noise right as the hood hit the guy's neck.
And I love Jake's insane cackle. He has this... And he does this the whole movie long. I'm like, if it was just took Jake and dialed him up to 11 and took the crazy shit like the woman getting plowed under at the beginning or the Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop and dialed all of this up to 11, we'd have an entertaining movie, if not necessarily a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you keep the pace going, because as we all know, when you get plot in a movie like this, the plot generally tends to slow the pacing down. And so they just threw out the plot, but the pacing is still slow.
And the thing is, this is an exceptionally linear plot. There is no twists and turns. There's no, oh my God, the killer is really, you know, my long-lost son from 50 years ago. No, it's just, dude shows up, murders a bunch of people, cops show up, kill him, done.
Boom, boom, yeah. Then, in order to stir things up even more, Angel disappears. And then later shows up in the cop car at the end, which is how the cops knew where to go, because she apparently went down the road by herself while all this shit was going on and found the cops.
I loved this bit where, so they're at the climax of the movie and you have the final girl in quotes because she's a shit final girl, and the husband, I guess, the boyfriend, the male companion, and they're under siege by Jake, and Jake's out in the darkness somewhere, and she's cuddling the kid, and the boyfriend looks over and it's like, you have real maternal instincts, and you're like, I have absolutely maternal instincts, so this kid brings it out of me. And then Jake shows up and they're like, they just fuck off, leave the kid.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Where'd your maternal instincts go? You just abandoned the kid and took the fuck off, leaving her with the killer.
It was weird. Her maternal instincts were only active when the little girl was in view.
She has object permanence problems, apparently.
Yeah. It's like Jurassic Park, you know, senses motion, so goes towards that. You know, Angel's the smartest character in this movie.
And the reason I call her a shit final girl is because, so you have the last 10 or so minutes of the movie is your typical horror movie, slasher movie, cat and mouse, much very similar to Friday the 13th and whatever, where, and so Jake is chasing her around this house and they're like, I'm hiding in the closet, and Jake's butt's in the closet, and I'm hiding under the bed, and so on and so on and so on. And then she just passes out. She just falls asleep and Jake loses track of her and wanders away. Apparently he has object permanence problems too. It's the next morning and she wakes up and comes out and, oh, it's a bright day. It's like, so the killer just got bored and wandered away? You're a shit final girl.
Also, the other thing that makes her a shit final girl is after the cops kill Jake, shoot him dead, she's lying on the ground, continuing to freak out. It requires the cop to grab her and kind of shake a little bit of sense into her for her to calm down. And then she's like, huh? Did something just happen? You know, she has this dazed look on her face. Like,
well, she has been chased around by a psycho killer and seen all everybody in the area where she was get murdered, except for the little girl.
And she did just stab a dude. She stabbed his body by Jake.
I understood why she was freaking out. I mean, like, what's her name? Burns at the end of Texas Chainsaw, where she gets away from Leatherface. She gets to that truck and she's just screaming her head off, you know, while they're driving off. It's like, goddamn.
So I won't necessarily hold that against her.
But her boyfriend, on the other hand, is getting into it with Jake, and he's just getting the shit kicked out of him, and eventually, you know, Jake, of course, is going to have to beat this guy. You know, you got to beat the beta male. There's your alpha male, which is Jake, and then there's your betas, which is all the other guys. But, interestingly, Mistake is also an alpha male. He's the guy that perpetuates a lot of shit. He instigates stuff. You know, he makes things happen. He makes people freak out. They chase him. He starts plots. And then he goes and entertains this, you know, little girl. So he has got alpha written all over him. It's just he's a minor alpha, whereas Jake is a major alpha.
It's a slasher movie, kids. So you know what that means. Pick a deaf Jeff. Jeff, Brad, Jeff, bad Jeff.
I know you're going to pick the elbow drop.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go with Mistake's death. Death by electric guitar.
It was well executed, if you'll pardon the pun. You can, you know, I mean, the guitar strings are melting. I mean, it was a reasonably well-done special effect. You?
I'm going with Maria's death because it was the most dramatic death in the entire thing with Mistake begging for Jake not to kill her and willing to sacrifice his life so that she didn't get her throat cut. And then he stabs her in the chest. He killed her anyway. And that was just the most wrenching death for me because she was a total innocent with no skin in the game.
And of course, so generally the deaths in this are at least entertaining, with a couple of notable exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of them are savage nasty, but not so nasty they couldn't run on TV. More implication than anything else for the really sick ones.
When Angel goes missing, that's the only suspenseful scene in this entire movie. The rest of it, when they're sitting around the fireplace with Jake in the background orbiting them, and they're jumping at sounds, and like, there's no suspense to this at all. It's just them sitting and watching the fireplace. Do some fucking thing.
Yeah, you know, Angel disappears early after they've set the table, and they're like, where's Angel? What the hell's going on? And then her legs are sticking out, and we realize she's sitting under the table stuffing her face. Yeah, that was pretty scary. It would have been a braver decision to kill her. If this movie had gone that way, it would have made it much darker, and it would have made the gravitas all these characters have about the deaths that much deeper.
And well, it would have landed this movie on the 39 list for sure if they had whacked the kid.
Oh yeah. This would have definitely. This would have put it in some rare company.
Mm-hmm.
Because child killing doesn't happen very often on the list.
As the way they made it, it actually was a rather funny red herring. Because, you know, you see her legs sticking out from underneath the table skirt, and you're like, oh my God, he's gone and killed her. And you're just that one moment of and then, oh, she's alive. You know, it's like, I thought that was actually pretty amusing.
Speaking of behind the scenes things, I want to instigate a rule from this point going forward that we will never make fun of day-for-night shooting, blatant day-for-night shooting, ever again. Because the person who has the brilliant idea of, hey, let's shoot all our movie in the dark, in the woods, with no lighting except like a flashlight and maybe an open window, throwing a little bit of light on the scene, needs to be dragged out of their car and stabbed.
That's my contention about why some of these kills shouldn't be considered all that bad, because it's so damn dark half the time you can't tell what the hell's going on.
Yeah, they're just wandering around in this black, inky void, and oh, he's got a little bit of red on his chest now, or something, I guess. It's a kill. Oh, fuck, I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes you can barely even see the character that the camera is focused on and is following.
The counterpoint to that is, so they're sitting around the fireplace. I liked the lighting there. So you can do minimalist lighting effectively. They just had no ability to do minimalist lighting effectively when it was outdoors.
Yeah, the interior were shots that they did where it was night, like the fireplace. That was highly effective. The dining room was effective. The kitchen was good.
Yeah, but they were operating. Most movies like this operate on a shoestring budget. This was operating on more like a buckle. And a partial end of that.
One of those frayed shoestrings when your eyelet's gone and it's all just hanging there nasty and loose.
Yeah, it's the thin one as opposed to the thick Run DMC double laces they used to do back in the 80s.
Yeah, you're looking at your shoe and you know that the second you pull on that lace, it's going to break.
So, do we have any final thoughts then, or should we just finish this?
If you're looking for something along these lines that's actually relatively fun with some backwoods and a killer that can't be stopped right away and some cheesy acting, try a Don Doler movie like Fiend or Galaxy Being or something like that.
Or just Don't Go in the Woods is a perfectly adequate regional low-budget movie.
That movie was really fun.
And this is not fun, except for a couple of moments with Body by Jake. So, my friends, the question then before us is, do we seize Home Sweet Home, or do you leave it the hell alone?
I say leave it.
Leave it.
It's pretty tame.
There's hardly anything that's objectionable. There's some blood, there's some violence. That's, and what blood and violence we see really isn't all that much.
I don't know. Jake drives around the town covered in blood in his car.
But it's all post facto. The on-screen kills, a lot of them are at night and kind of in bad conditions, and it's in old print. So, but I guess back in those days, they would have based it on the, you know, what the kind of movies were coming out then. Is it as bad as Friday the 13th? Is it as bad as Halloween? Texas Chainsaw. Texas Chainsaw has almost no blood in it, like a thimble of blood, and yet people ran in droves to see this sicko movie.
The thing is, you have to think of this like you're a censor with ADD and no attention span. So you put the movie in, you watch the first 5 minutes or so, and you get an old lady getting run over and a car covered in blood, and you get Jake strangling the fuck out of a dude and then shooting a PCP under his tongue. That's kind of something that's going to make you go, "Argh," and then turn it off. If you turn it off at that point, there's nothing left in the movie. That's it.
This movie is just an exercise in your standard run-of-the-mill slasher slash kind of it's actually, no, there's no fucking suspense in this movie. It's just a slasher flick with Body by Jake.
This right here is far more violent than the movie was.
Yeah, there's a ton of fuckery with no fuck.
Ashley, mi amigo, did you like
I didn't hate it, but I did find myself on several occasions, my attention went that way. And it wasn't quick. I actually sat through the first 20 or so minutes, even past the really bad Maria audition scene where she jumps in there, and just in the worst possible parody of a Mexican woman who can't sing, played by a Mexican woman, she's just belting out this can't play, can't sing, and I thought to myself, what the fuck did I just walk into?
Did you like Home Sweet Home?
It wasn't really boring. It wasn't slow enough or bad enough to be boring, but I just didn't really like it either.
It was just interesting enough to keep my attention for the runtime. If you asked me about it now, I'd be like, I don't remember a thing about the goddamn movie, which is kind of awkward because we're reviewing it.
That says something right there.
Yeah.
The movie, I laughed at parts of the movie. It's got just enough to recommend that'll get you through the day, but the thing is absolutely nothing.
The Macho Man Randy Savage is not happy with your decision, yeah.
This movie does have a few good things going for it, but they're not a lot good. They're just a little good. And a lot of it is just kind of, it drags. It just, you're just slogging along going, okay, when's the next mildly amusing little bit gonna come up?
Bits like the Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop to the car hood. I liked that. Mm-hmm. Mistake's death with the guitar and the melting wires, I thought was pretty well executed.
Mistake is consistently interesting. I mean, part of it is the face paint, part of it is his rock and roll guitar playing habit, part of it is the way he dresses, the fact that he sneaks up on people and scares them all the time, and then gets chased around. I mean, this is a kid who basically, I think, is bored out of his skull and is desperate to try and find ways to entertain himself.
Okay, this movie is really tough to recommend and really tough to get through, but you can find it for free on YouTube, so it'll cost you an hour and a half of your life.
Our tempting, tasty French fries go with everything. Come and get them. They are hot. They are delicious.
Well, that was Home Sweet Home, and it was all right. But if you like what you saw here, shoot us an email at thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And nous portons la maladie et la rapidité. So, if you like what you've seen here, come back next week for Honeymoon Horror. Should be good. See you there, and remember, stay
Wait, I'll go with you.